We're good to go.
If the roar of the crowd gives you goosebumps, cashing a slip makes you grin, and above all, you love making your bookie cry, then you're in the right place. The number one spot for premier betting advice and wild opinions, shared with a fan base like no other. Welcome home. This is the Punch List MMA Podcast. Here are your hosts, Dale Lippin and Trey Van Buskirk.
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? You are tuned into the newest edition of the Punch List MMA Podcast. It's your boy, Dale Lippin, in here with the hobo wonder himself. Doesn't have two nickels to rub together, can't keep himself warm. Trey Van Buskirk, what's up, man?
I am not Barack Obama, but I will ask for some change, please.
Oh man, what an interesting weekend. But before we get into that, do you know what today is? You see, here's the thing, is you surprise me every once in a while. Actually, it's not even every once in a while. You surprise me a lot. So I want to know if you know the significance of today, February 23rd.
Yesterday was National Margarita Day.
That's a good one, but think more so along the lines of what we're wearing here.
Allegiance clothing. How does that relate to the 23rd of February?
76 years ago, Trey, and I'm sure producer Jake knows exactly where I'm going with this, was the day that the United States Marine Corps planted the flag on top of Mount Suribachi in Iwo Jima.
Iwo Jima. Yeah. Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. See, for those of you that can't see, producer Jake is in the background. He knows what's up. 76 years ago today, February 23rd is when that happened. So I try to do the best I possibly can to, you know, show and as much patriotism as possible. Proud service member, as well as producer Jake and a lot of my family members. So I try to honor them whenever I can. And remembering such things and the sacrifices that they had and people that have come before us have made. So I appreciate that. All right. Before I get too sappy about this, last weekend was a difficult weekend. It was a high and low kind of weekend. Let's talk about this for a second. First of all, let's do this. I'm not one for apologizing. You know me.
Yeah.
Not big on apologies. It's not really my deal. I'll apologize to friends, family, my wife, my kids, you occasionally, but I think that we probably owe Phil Hawes an apology. I know that you tried to sing to him, but you, dude, you went in on Phil. You really went in on Phil.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this for a second. You were upset.
Yeah.
Are you still as upset? Do you want to say sorry, or what's the plan here?
I've calmed down pretty significantly since said night. I will say this, Phil Hawes saw my message.
He did.
He did. His little blue check mark in our messages received.
He did see it.
He didn't comment back. Now, I don't know if he's just too much of a pussy. I was in the heat of the moment. I will say I understand his strategy. Exercises, right. Wrestling, sure. Elongate the fight, get the points and get out. I get it. Now, am I a bit of a casual that I want to see, you know, the fireworks? I want to see that pizzazz. Absolutely. And I knew that Imavov had that in his hands. Let those puppies fly for a second and people are going down. And that's what we saw in the third round. If that were to have been exercised in the first and second, I believe this would have been totally different. But Phil saw, he became the ultimate hugging champion. And that's what he did. He got the win, but no, he's not getting my respect. Absolutely not.
Gotcha. Okay. And that's fair. That was the end of your parlay. And as such, the end of your balance. You are buying back in. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Unbeknownst to my wife.
Add a 10%. Add a 10% penalty as well. So that's good. That's good. I'll just take that and I'll add that to my balance. As you know, and I don't want to allow for spoilers, but as you know, I have a game plan to get myself to the promised land by the end of week, the end of week two here, or the 2 weeks remaining. I will be ready to rock and roll. I have a game plan of all game plans on what I'm going to do. it does not get any better than this, Trey. I very rarely walk around with this much confidence, and I am fired up. I'm fired up, man. I can smell victory.
I know you're full chub right now. I can tell.
Three quarter.
Are you going to explain to the listeners today at the end of the show that you are only 10% to goal right now?
I am only 10% to goal, but here's the thing. And I want to give a shout out. I believe she'll be on the show later. She brought this to our attention, that if we were looking at this as a stock, right? If we were looking this as a stock, and I would be up 25% right now. So if this is Dogecoin, I'm going to the moon. Going to the moon, man.
Yeah.
So
no, you got onto my game stock, dude. That's what you're riding right now.
I'm on that AMC right now. I'm on the AMC train. We're going to the moon here, so don't worry about it. I've got a plan. You know me, I like to play everything close. We're going to get there. Don't worry.
All right. Well, I'm working off a broken Nokia Flip Razor phone right now. Dude, get me that iPhone. Let's get into this, dude.
There is no – so first of all, you can't break a Nokia phone, so I don't know what you have. But it's not a broken Nokia, because those things will be here long after you and I are in the dirt, dead and gone. Nokia like phones still exist. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. 100%. They're good forever. All right. Speaking of things that are good, and speaking of things that will last as long, well, they don't last forever. They barely last at all. It's the meat from Stay Classy Meats, man. As soon as it comes off the grill, it's gone. It's gone. Half the time when I cook something, throw something on the Traeger, smoke it, whatever it needs to do, and I bring it into the house, I start slicing and dicing. I can't even get it on the plate. The family just crowds around the island, and we just eat off the cutting board like savages. It's that good. And, you know, you always say, well, Dale, I need you to take pictures. We got to put social media assets out, so that way Stay Classy Meats can see that we're repping their products. Bro, I can't even get a picture of it. It's gone. It's gone. It does exist. Stay Classy Meats do exist. It's just so good. It's gone before it even hits the plate. So I don't know what to do. I mean, if you don't believe me and you want to see that Stay Classy Meats will deliver directly from ranch to table, use promo code FIST, save 10% on the entire thing. And you can see that I'm not lying. I just can't actually eat it or take a picture of it because I eat it too fast.
Yeah, it's a problem to have, man. You know, they've got everything, dude. They've got freaking tigers.
No, they don't have tigers.
They've got fox.
They don't have fox meat either.
Okay. Well, they do have a wide variety of said animals, though.
They do, but they do not have tigers or fox.
Okay. All right. Well, outside of, again, having everything at your disposal meat-wise, you guys need to have at your disposal the best threads out there. Guys, Allegiance Clothing, we tout it every single episode. Just go to their website, allegianceclothing.com, type in the code PUNCH, and you're going to get 15% off site-wide. Guys, right now, you can go on allegianceclothing.com and get the sickest blood red Punchless MMA collab Allegiance shirt on the planet. We've got one out to your boy, John Anik, who will be on the show next week. Maybe he's going to don at UFC 259. I don't know. But if you want to don something that someone might wear on stage next to those heroes that are throwing down gladiator style in the cage, go to allegianceclothing.com, type in the code PUNCH, and get yourself 15% off and that sick tee.
Or if you follow us on social media, it's at the link in our bio.
Oh, geez, such so efficient.
I'm just saying, man. I'm just trying to make things streamline, bro. Streamline. All right. Yep. We could spend some time recapping the card that happened last weekend, but I feel like you probably want to move on, right?
I don't want to. Don't say Phil or Hawes for the next 50 minutes, please.
Excellent. So let's move past that, and let's get into the first fight on the main card this upcoming weekend. Alex Caceres, Bruce Leroy at 17-12, taking on Kevin Crash Kroom at 21-12. Little bit of salty records on the boys here, but Caceres is at a -205 over Kevin Kroom at a +175. Over on rounds is at 2.5. And I want to say something here. I'm gonna touch on this very briefly. Kevin Kroom beat Roosevelt Roberts on one day's notice. And then had his fight overturned because he had pot in his system. There's not a lot of things that really, you know, spurn my ire like something like that does. The guy took the fight on one day's notice, and it's pot. It's not, EPO like TJ Dillashaw. It's not cocaine. It's not heroin. I don't look, man. Why are we penalizing guys for smoking weed at this point? It is ridiculous. Different rant for a different day. Kevin Kroom trains out of Glory MMA. James Krause will be in the corner, head coach. We just saw Glory pick up a huge win on Saturday. Derek Minner beat just pillar to post, dominated Charles Rosa. And what a lot of people thought was going to be a very even jiu-jitsu practitioner battle, it was not competitive at all. And if those are the kind of looks that a guy like Kevin Kroom's getting on a day-in and day-out basis at Glory MMA, I love him here against Alex Caceres, who is a perennial win one, lose one, never live up to the potential, bad gas tank, get submitted all the time, get caught in weird stuff, throw spinny shit all the time. I love Kevin Kroom at plus 175. This is good money here. I love him in this. I love him at that price. I love it.
You said it all, man. I don't have one other point. I think the only thing I could say about Alex Caceres is he's that, you know, the Bruce Leroy. Hey, yeah, keep that freaking distance going. Utilize that finesse, that footwork, keep it around the cage. But again, doesn't know how to fight off submissions, doesn't know how to fight the hands. It seems like everyone that fights Alex Caceres always ends up on his back. I think that, you know, you got to go with Glory MMA right now. They're on a heater. I like what James Krause is doing over there. Caceres, dude, he is the lowest level gatekeeper, I think, in the UFC. There's a reason they put him there. Salty record, but he's a very foundational, how do you barrier to entry UFC Alex Caceres.
One thing of note too, been paying a lot of attention to Kevin Kroom. He's been doing a lot of Instagram lives lately, and one thing that he is constantly reiterating is that he will die before this fight sees round three. He wants this thing done inside of two rounds. Whether he's losing or winning, he is saying this fight will not see round three. Win, lose, or draw, he's putting everything he has into the first 10 minutes of this fight. So under 2.5 looks like a tasty little proposition here.
A little tasty lick.
Yeah, exactly. I will take a man at his word in that regard. All right, man. Dude, I don't know what you're going to do here. Battle of your two favorite women on the roster. Angela Hill at 12-9, taking on Ashley Yoder at 8-6. Yes, that is correct. 8-6 for your girl, Ashley Yoder. A massive underdog at a plus 300. Angela Hill coming back minus 375. Over on rounds is at 2.5 here. I'm going to let you lead in on this one because I took the Kroom headline from you. So go ahead.
This is a rematch. What, back from 2017, I think this line is disgusting. I understand that Angela Hill is the new Cowboy Cerrone of you know, quick fights, quick turnarounds. She got COVID, though. I haven't seen her since September. I think Ashley Yoder, dude, everyone's got a Yodelay he, her to the bank. And I say that for a couple reasons. Angela Hill is going to have the pop. She's going to have the footwork. She's going to be more confident in standing and trading. But Ashley Yoder, you got to go back. In 2017, the chick was a purple belt or maybe even like a four-stripe blue. I don't know. She wasn't where she is now. She is a black belt. She has learned that she is a heavier chick. She's one that can work in the clinch. And if she gets a takedown, she's able to find those submissions. I think that Angela Hill's biggest vulnerability has always been on the ground. So Ashley Yoder is smart. She knows what type of blueprint she has. She knows how to enact her game plan. And when you have someone like Angela Hill who doesn't want anything to do with the ground, and someone that's better on the ground at plus 300 money, tell me why I shouldn't take Ashley Yoder.
I've already told you this. For the remainder of 2021, I'm betting every women's underdog. So you already know I'm on Ashley Yoder here. I think that Angela Hill probably has more momentum. She, you know, in my opinion, beat Claudia Gadelha. I think that she's really like come into her own and looked very good as of late. Activity has really done well for her. Staying as active as she has, it's really paying dividends on the win-loss. Here's the thing, though, is that I think Ashley Yoder presents a unique set of problems, a unique skill set, if you will, a Liam Neeson style. The skills that she has are tailor-made to beat a woman like Angela Hill. Now, she has that one clear path to victory, and I do believe it to be via submission. If she cannot submit Angela Hill, I don't think that she's going to win this fight. No. So she's got a clear path to victory, but it has to be that one way. I'm looking at by submission props for Ashley Yoder, and I'm looking at taking her at plus money at that plus 300 as well, because I really think that's the only way she's going to win the fight. But it's worth it. I'm telling you, I'm betting every women's underdog from here on out, man. I refuse. I'm not betting a women's favorite.
Hey, plus 300. Let's do it.
Let's get that money, bro. Let's get it. All right. A rematch. Yeah, they fought before, right? Pedro Munhoz and Jimmy Rivera. I could have swore they fought before.
I think you're just thinking they got recanceled and booked three different times.
Are you sure?
Have they fought? I don't think they've fought.
I think they have. Well, I got to look real quick.
I'm embarrassed. They have. I don't remember.
Yeah, they did fight. UFC Fight Night 77 back in 2015. I don't know why you didn't remember that, bro.
Damn.
Pedro Munhoz plus 135 versus Jimmy Rivera.
What happened? Minus
155. Jimmy Rivera won that fight, just like he's going to win this one. Over under on rounds is at 2.5. I like Jimmy Rivera in this fight. I liked him 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago when this fight was initially supposed to happen. I like him. I still like him. Nothing's changed but the date. Literally, I think Jimmy Rivera gets it done any way that he wants it. Pedro Munhoz will be there to be hit, and Jimmy Rivera will hit him. I don't think he's going to knock Pedro out. Pedro has shown himself to be very durable. A couple of things that he does have to worry about. Jimmy Rivera has been sloppy in exchanges before. He can get caught. Pedro Munhoz has really stepped up his striking. The other thing, too, is Pedro very underrated as far as leg kicks are concerned, and he is not shy when it comes to utilizing the calf kicks that are becoming oh so popular right now. He can cut down on the movement of Jimmy Rivera and put himself in a position to land some decent combinations by chopping up those legs. And I think that he'll try to do that. In the process, though, I see Jimmy Rivera tagging him and inflicting damage on Pedro. Pedro is one of the most hittable fighters, if not the most hittable fighter, I think, statistically on the roster. That's have to be something we'd have to consult. What is it? Numbers MMA on, but I believe Pedro is one of, if not the most hittable fighter on the roster. I think that Jimmy Rivera gets his fight done. I like Jimmy Rivera by decision. I like the over 2.5 as well.
I think in a dog fight, there's always one that gets bit a little bit harder and just starts to go absolutely bonkers. And that's Pedro Munhoz. So that's a guy that he gets very susceptible to the brawl. Unfortunately, but fortunately, he's always been on the right side of that. Whether that was the Cody Garbrandt thing, Frankie Edgar was never going to put him out, but he is susceptible to those brawls. He keeps his hands low, which keeps, you know, him wide open. I think he likes to join those brawls for a couple of reasons. One, if he lands, he's got heavy hands. And if he gets wobbled and it goes down on the ground, he's got great jiu-jitsu. We've seen him get wobbled before, and what does he do? He climbs the tree, snatches a guillotine, brings it down, rides those legs high, and cinches it. We saw it Rob Font. We've seen it like a bunch of different times with Pedro Munhoz. I don't think Jimmy Rivera is the type of guy that wants to engage in a fight like that, though. I think, to your point, he's going to have the technical striking. He's going to have the prowess to keep it at distance, pick and choose his shots, and get it done by decision. So this is not going to be a Cody Garbrandt-type era. This is going to be very cut and dry, very technical, and I think Jimmy's going to get it done.
Yeah, I think so. Let's see here. Next fight on the card, Montana De La Rosa at 11-6. Myra Bueno Silva, I should say, is at 7-1. De La Rosa plus 115. Myra Silva here, Trey, surprisingly, minus 135. She is the favorite. I'm leaning towards De La Rosa here, but again, she's plus money and it's a women's fight, so you already know where I'm leaning to begin with. But I think Montana De La Rosa's got the better strength of schedule, and I feel like she should win this fight. I'm not really sure, not that this is like a super disrespectful line, but what have you seen out of Silva that has Vegas making this line the way that it is currently?
I think with De La Rosa, they worry with a wrestler and a jiu-jitsu practitioner here. And Buena Silva, she's someone that's good off her back. So I think the worry is if Montana De La Rosa goes out there and wrestles heavy and gets this thing to the ground, how active is Buena Silva's guard going to be? Is she going to be able to throw up a triangle? Is she going to be able to, like, you know, clinch something down quickly? I am worried about that, but I think Montana De La Rosa is smart enough. She comes from Team Elevation. I know from a mental perspective, they worked hard on, hey, when you get this takedown, stay in half guard and keep your distance and land some ground and pound. Don't get pulled into any of her tricks or slick submissions. I think a lot of people are seeing those slick submissions off her back, and that's where the line's going. But I think Montana De La Rosa is, one, love the plus money, two, great team, and three, I think she's smart enough to not engage like that.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the three fights that Silva's had inside the octagon, two of which have been armbar victories. So it's definitely something that you have to pay attention to. I feel like De La Rosa possesses enough basic skills to not get caught up in that. I could be overhyping her. I could not be giving enough credit to Silva. I'm not sure where I'm falling. Time will tell. We'll learn on Saturday night. But I feel like I feel like De La Rosa has all the skills necessary to win this fight.
I agree. Sorry, I'm looking in the chat for a quick second. Our friend Alfredo Munoz here said that we had a better success when we started with the prelims. That's some boogeyman shit, dude. I'm kind of freaked out. He could be totally right. Could be way better starting at the prelims.
When I saw that comment as well. I'm trying to remember when the last time we started with the prelims was, though. I really can't remember. For the longest time, we've done main card, then prelims. I know occasionally we've switched it up, but it's not been of anything substantial. But now that you've got me thinking about it, that's great, man. That'll only eat at my soul for the rest of the night. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
As I try to remember when the last time we did that. All right, co-main event of the evening, Magomed Ankalaev taking on Nikita Krylov. Ankalaev at 14-1, Trey, taking on Krylov at 27-7. Ankalaev, a massive -340 favorite here versus a very experienced Nikita Krylov at +280. Over under on rounds is at 1.5. I don't think we'll need anything other than the first round for this fight, though. What do you think?
Really?
I really do.
So are you thinking that Ankalaev is a guy that's just going to like throw heavy, kind of like what happened in the Kutalaba fight? Or you think he's going to be what he was coming into the UFC, which was like a Khabib Russian style grinder wrestler? That's what he was. So wouldn't you think that would go over?
Maybe, but I don't necessarily. I think he has the advantage anywhere in this fight. Mm. So I think if it stays standing, he has the advantage. I think if it goes to the ground, I think he has the advantage. So I'm not really sure where Nikita Krylov is going to impose himself to win this fight. I don't think he gets it done on the ground. I think maybe his best opportunity for success is to get Ankalaev to get into some sort of sloppy exchange and take advantage of that. But I really just don't see it. I think that Ankalaev can win this fight however he wants to. I would love a Dagestani wrestling clinic. I think that would be the surest path to victory for him. But you know as well as I do, when you get a knockout, guys fall in love with their hands. And I think he's going to go out there, and I think he's going to engage with Krylov for a little bit, which is either going to put Nikita in a position to win, or he's going to be successful. We see that he carries power. We see that he can turn the lights out, and he's creative. He's a creative striker, which is scary too. That's a big guy to be as creative on the feet as he is. I definitely think that he's got the opportunity to win this fight standing. I think he's got the opportunity to wrestle out to a decision. I think maybe he could even wear down Krylov and get a submission. I really think it's wherever he wants it, man. I mean, -340 says Vegas thinks he gets it done wherever he wants it.
Gosh, I just feel like I haven't seen enough on the ground to want to weigh that way. And Krylov, you got to remember, this is a guy that submitted OSP. He's a guy that's very comfortable on the ground, especially given his resume. Magomed, when you go back and watch his fight against Paul Craig, didn't look that great. Now, granted, that's what Paul Craig's like cream of the crop shit is, but I think that there is a path for Krylov to get this done. I think he has to get it on the ground, but dude, you are looking up against a mountain of a man to get down to the mat, and that's going to be a tough thing.
We shall see on Saturday night. All right, main event of the evening, talking about two mountainous men. Yuri's Jarzinho. Rosenstrike at 11-1, taking on Cyril Gane at 7-0. I don't understand this line either, to be honest with you, Trey. Rosenstrike at a +220. Gane at a -260. Over on our rounds here is at 1.5. I'm going to be honest with you. Of all the lines that we talk about tonight, this is the one that confuses me the most. If you look at the strength of schedule, and if you look at the performance given the strength of schedule, I don't understand how this isn't closer. I would even be okay, let's just be realistic, if Rosenstrike was like a +160. But +220, -260 for Gane, boy, does that feel disrespectful. It almost leads me to believe that Rosenstrike is going to win this fight, because I know that we've said that 2021 is the year of the casual. But man, I really feel like Rozenstruik's got a decent chance here, much more so than a plus 220 line would indicate. That's a big line, man. That's good value. That's great value.
I'll tell you why. You want to know why it's so wide?
Yeah.
It's because people are jaded by the chest tattoo of Ciryl Gane.
Okay.
It's just like Thiago Santos. When you have a big pronounced chest tattoo that makes absolutely no sense, people have absolutely no idea what technique that person possesses.
Okay.
Ciryl Gane has not fought even close to the quality of competition Zarzinho has fought. Zarzinho, he has fought. You have to forget, or you cannot forget, that Zarzinho has had 70 pro kickboxing fights. Yeah. This guy is smart. The only reason that we start to put a little poo-poo on Zarzinho is the fact that he's been knocked the fuck out. We think that he's chinny. We think that he's susceptible. And I mean, you look at a guy like Ciryl Gane that is built like a mountainous man who is scary as shit with that chest tattoo, you think that he's going to get sucked in and susceptible as well. Zarzinho has the technique. Calf kick the shit out of you. He will keep you from distance. He will pepper you. He will put the volume out there. And we have not seen Ciryl to have that good of a cardio tank. We haven't seen that much historical data to prove that he can go into the later rounds and put Zarzinho out. If I have to say Zarzinho one more time, I'm going to start a motorcycle.
I like it, man. First of all, I like the way you say that. Second of all, I think that's a valid point. I did forget about his kickboxing record. He is a very experienced combat athlete. Realistically, if you're looking at his one loss, it's because he got bull rushed by Francis Ngannou, and nobody really expected that to happen. And if Francis knocks you out, are we really counting that as like some sort of litmus test to your skill? No, I don't believe that's the case. I think that if Francis knocks you out, I mean, that's really just kind of the thing that happens, right? Yeah. That's par for the course. So I'm not putting a lot of weight in that. I think that he bounces back here. I think he gets this W. I like the plus 220 money. I was initially, when this fight got announced, I was really on Gane. But given the way the line looks, I don't want to play him at the minus 260. If it was tighter and get better money out of him, I'd play him. But minus 260 is too rich for my blood, man. I like Rozenstruik at the plus 220. That looks like a good way to cap off the parlay on Saturday night. What do you think?
I love it. I love it. It's so good.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got somebody else in here.
Yeah.
We got somebody else. Oh, there it is.
I wasn't ready. I thought you guys were going to go through all the fights.
No. We're gonna bring you in. We're gonna talk. we're gonna work through some of these because you sent me your list earlier, so I've been preparing. I've got notes. And I'm ready to go. So, Trey, I believe Trey, you saw that you prepared as well, correct?
I did. I feel like Kate's way more organized and prepared. You're all put together. You have your notes ready to go. Like my hair, I look like a troll right now. Dale, I guess you look like a troll as well.
Always. Billy Goat Scrub. I'm the kind of guy that asks you riddles if you ever want to go in there.
Gotta pay the troll toll, dude.
Oh, yeah. So you're calling then.
Yeah, for sure. I will make you answer riddles before you do anything. Kate, you do look like you just came from like a court deposition or something like that. What's going on?
They don't call me sophisticated MMA for
nothing. That is correct. Bang, bang. All right. Hit me with that first hot take. What do you got for us?
All right. Usman, dear Usman, we respect you.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't like you very much.
Mm.
And I say that mostly in jest, you know, to get my point across. But my thing with Usman, and it's been this for a while, is that his attitude when he's, you know, on a press tour or doing a press conference or promoting a fight, or when they catch him in those, in my opinion, planned situations.
Okay.
He just comes off as like, it's not him. And I wish I could get a hold of anybody on his team to be like, why haven't you told him to stop this shtick? Like, no one likes it. No one believes it. There's actually a video, and I don't remember who originally put it out, but it's of Derek Lewis coming into Usman shooting a video like at the Dallas Cowboys Museum or something. And Derek Lewis kind of grabs him by the collar and he's like, no, you're supposed to, you know, cheer for Houston. And Usman looks genuinely scared. Right. I'm like, 10 out of 10 believe that more than anything that he says when he's got a mic in his face otherwise. Like on the desk in ESPN, he sounds so smart, like so intelligent, so on the money. Like he just comes off as this really super articulate, intelligent dude. And then you get him after a fight and it's, you better put some respect on my name, son. And I'm like, yeah, you're laughing.
That's uncanny. You sound exactly like him. That is wild.
But it sounds just as ridiculous when I do it, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Neither of you believe I'm doing anything, right?
It just
doesn't land. And I just wish he'd stop it.
So we respect Usman, we just don't like him.
I like him. I mean, like when I watch his videos, like when he's just getting interviewed regularly, I like him. I like listening to what he has to say. I don't like this persona that he puts on.
Fair enough. Trey, do you respect him or do you like him? Or do you both? Is it both?
To me, he reminds me of an insecure high school girl, man. Where the hot chick comes up and says, hey, you know what? Bangs are not in. Bangs are not in. And then the next day he comes and he doesn't have bangs. And I say that because that's what Colby Covington did. Said, dude, check out that receding hairline. What does he have now? He's got a bald head. He's the most insecure person. So when, Kate, you talk about him going after and saying, putting some respect to my name and trying to be all thuggery and gnarly and badass, he's just a bitch. He's got great striking. He's a great athlete, but he's not a marketer. It's so disingenuous.
Yes.
So, respect him as an athlete. Outside of that, I'm not going to be friends with him. Dale?
There's nothing I can say to this to bring any value to this conversation. You guys have nailed it. I'm not the biggest Ben Askren fan in the entire world. However, I think that he's very on point whenever he would call him Marty. I think when Colby would call him Marty, I thought that was great too, because if you've ever seen any footage of him when he was in college or coming out of high school, and they would interview him, he was a very humble, very well-spoken, very articulate, very self-aware person. And then it's just, again, it's a character.
Yep.
I thought that the whole thing with the whole put some respect on my name. I also thought after the Colby Covington fight too, where he was walking around and his mouth was all swollen. He's like, I tried to tell him I'm a problem. I was like, dude, I don't understand. Nobody thought that you weren't, buddy. You're so good.
Right.
Just be good. All right. Fair enough. Excellent point, Kate. All right. Let's break down some prelim fights. Maxime
Grishin. You turn me off, you know.
Do you want us to send you off?
Yeah, pop me back in when you want to talk again.
All right, there we go. I just took her right back out. All right, man. Maxime Grishin at 31-8-2, taking on Dustin Jacoby at 13-5. I feel like you're big on Jacoby in this fight. I was down on Jacoby his last fight, and he proved me wrong with the win over Justin Liddette. Grishin, I'm going to make sure I say his name right, plus 155. Jacoby minus 180, over-under on rounds is at 2.5 here, Trey. I was impressed by Jacoby and what we saw. I think he has gotten better, but boy, do we have an experienced, big 205 or even 185 if he can make it, Maxime Grishin here.
Yeah, and Grishin fought Ankalaev, dude.
Yeah.
He's been around for a minute. Dustin Jacoby, though, here's the thing is he's predominantly a counterpuncher, which makes me worried with someone who Maxime Grishin, who's going to come in as a dog in this fight, needs to be the aggressor. If Dustin Jacoby can come in and be first, you know, and I know that's tough to say, almost counterintuitive with a counterpuncher, I do think that he has the tools to get it done. I don't see this going under 2.5. I think that's perfectly set. I see this being an over, but I think, you know, Maxime Grishin, I don't want to say he's been known to be chinny, but he's been around and, you know, he is a a vet in the Apex. Put him up to the gods.
Maybe. I don't know if he's a legend of the game. I mean, he is a vet. There is no doubt there. He's got wins over quality opponents though. over a wide variety of skill sets. He's faced elite level strikers before. He's faced elite wrestlers before. You know, Dustin Jacoby, we've talked about this before. My man fought back like when he was on what, the Nick Diaz versus BJ Penn card, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about a guy that's been in the game for a while, and then he was gone for a long time, and now he's back. I mean, I like Dustin Jacoby. Like I said, I was down on him in the Ledette fight, and he proved me wrong. He looked fantastic. He's definitely gotten better as a mixed martial artist, definitely gotten better as a combat athlete. His kickboxing pedigree is, you know, I don't want to say it's second to none, but he's got a high-level kickboxing pedigree. He's got to do something, though, against the Russian here in Maxime Grishin, though, that I don't necessarily know that I trust enough, right? Justin Ledette's a boxer. He went out there. They threw hands. Maxime Grishin is not about that life. He's gonna push him up against the cage. He's going to make this ugly and has no qualms with winning this in a super lackluster three-round decision. He has no problem doing that at all. He gives zero hoots about losing or winning, rather, a boring fight. He just wants the W. Just wants that W.
That's what makes me worried, though, because that's what Jacoby likes. He likes to fight off his heels. He likes to be backed up. And that counter-punching style, I think, is going to be a big issue for someone being the aggressor. That's why I'd like to see Jacoby implement his game plan, but kind of push forward a little bit. Don't be up against the cage, because I am worried that Grishin can wrestle this thing to death, elongate it, and maybe win on points. But I think if Dustin moves forward a little bit, he can get in and get this thing done.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. Next fight on the prelims, we got Vince Cachero at 7-3 taking on Ronnie Lawrence at 6-1. Don't want to give him that credit for the win just yet. Ronnie Lawrence is the -170 favorite. Cachero +145 over on rounds is at 2.5. Ronnie Lawrence looked good on Contender Series, man. I think I'm just going to go ahead and take him here. I don't want to, you know, church this one up too much. I think he's going to be the bigger, stronger fighter come fight night. -170. That's a decent parlay piece as far as I'm concerned, a decent price on him. I like him to get it done.
Yeah, Cachero, if people don't know, he was a former LFA title challenger. He's going to be 2 inches smaller. He's going to give up a 2.5-inch reach. Ronnie Lawrence, though, this guy coming off Dana White Contender Series, go back and watch his fights. This guy is Disney on ice. He's dancing with the stars, super flashy, spinning back elbows, absolutely wild, and he's got power behind every facet of your body. I think that flashy style, I actually like the under in this fight. Ronnie Lawrence is a threat in this fight. I think, you know, Vince has been around for a minute, and I just don't think the crossover into the UFC is going to do him well.
Disney on ice. I like that.
Yeah,
I do. I like that a lot.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, man, enough of this Mickey Mouse.
Wait, house. What? Speaking of which, in our poll, resounding, everyone said that Donald Duck would beat the shit out of Mickey Mouse.
Of course he would. Of course he would.
Just because of his nose, right?
I think it has a little bit to do with the nose, but I also think that, you know, he's going to have the speed advantage.
Over Mickey Mouse?
Oh, for sure.
Really?
Yeah, dude. First of all, plus the aggression level. Have you ever seen a duck or a goose when they're protective?
Well, Donald's always pissed.
Always. He's already fiery anyway.
Yeah.
So here's the thing is that I think that Donald has the aggression level. I think he comes out, he starts fast, he finishes him early. I think he busts up the nose. So I don't want to break down this fight right now. You're getting me off topic. William Knight at 9-1, taking on Alonzo Menifield at 9-2. Interesting fight here, Trey. Pretty much at a pick 'em. We're just going to leave it at that. Over on our rounds at 1.5. I don't necessarily trust either one of these guys, but there is going to be a lot of power and a lot of weight being thrown around on Saturday night. Yeah. All that being said, I kind of like over 1.5 here. Seems counterintuitive, but you know me, I like this over.
These are both guys that I don't trust their cardio tank more than I could throw them.
You cannot throw these guys. They are thick. Yeah.
But they're both guys that literally after like the first round are sucking wind. They need oxygen, like, you know, get the freaking inhaler out if possible.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like they rip a line of cocaine and they're just right back in the game. Their ebb and flow of the cardio on them, both these, it makes absolutely zero sense to me. I think that William Knight, though, is a little bit more well-rounded. He has a good ground game. Alonzo Menifield is going to push us up against the cage, make this clinch heavy, make it a little bit ugly. You know, he doesn't seem to struggle really with that wrestling game in Menifield. So I think I like the overplay on this for sure. I think it's going to get drawn out, and that's kind of all I want to touch on it. I think that William Knight might win in decision on this, but I think where I feel most comfortable is over 1.5.
Yeah. Both of these guys push the UFC uniform, if you will, to the limit. Mm. Both of these guys are crazy thick, like muscular. So it's wild. I mean, just they push it to the limit. Very, very durable, malleable fabric the UFC uniforms are made out of.
Oh, I thought you were saying they're the type of guys that like go out to dinner with their wife and they're wearing the UFC shirt, like kind of douchebaggery.
Oh, they may. I have no idea. I have no idea.
It's like, what's that? What's that? That super fat golfer that won the Masters that everyone hates?
Patrick. Oh, Patrick Reed.
Patrick Reed. The dude goes to a New York Yankees game right behind home plate, and he's wearing his green jacket. It's like, come on, dude.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I would do the same thing.
I know, but so would I. But you know,
I would do the same thing. If I won the Masters, you would bury me in that jacket. And I would have people address me as 2000 whatever year I won at Masters champion, and then my name. That's how I would. That's how I would do it.
Last thing I want to say about this fight, real quick though, Menifield, sprinkle a little bit maybe on decision there. I think that's in like the +5s or +6s. Absolutely bonkers. So both these guys, I do think this is a possibility to go decision. Sprinkle a little bit on Menifield there and make some money.
Perfect. And she's back looking at her phone. Here we
go. I'm looking at my phone, trying to get more people to watch.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. I appreciate you. All right. Yeah. Hit us with hot take number two.
Two. If we don't elevate this sport and continue to improve the way that the sport is managed, somebody else will. Our hand will be forced.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that I saw a post, and I forget who originally made it, but it was somebody tweeting out that if you have anything bad to say about Herb Dean's stoppage in the Blaydes-Lewis fight, don't watch MMA. And I went, like, we have to be allowed to say if something maybe wasn't great. We have to be allowed to criticize these things. Sure. Dale, I think you and I were having this conversation where you said Herb Dean is either on top of the fighters or across the cage.
Yes.
And I think in this instance, it was across the cage, and he didn't quite get there in time. And I'm not trying to say he's a bad ref or that we should be coming for him in the same way that somebody came for Blaydes. I don't know if you guys saw that trolling video. That was
awful. Was disgusting.
Yeah. Don't do that. That's terrible behavior, but we should be able to talk about it. And we should be able to say, is there a better way to do this? Maybe is there a way to train these refs as to where you should be positioned in the cage based on the action so that we can avoid this kind of stuff? Because if we don't do it, if we don't do it ourselves, eventually somebody else is going to get word of it. And, you know, the powers that be are going to start hovering over us, and I don't like any of that.
So here I've watched there are a couple different things. One, Trey, if you're not aware, somebody got a hold of Curtis Blaydes' phone number and FaceTimed him, and he actually answered the FaceTime, and this guy was like, "Hey, Curtis, you got knocked the F out." And Curtis was like, "I don't even know you, man." And the guy was just this little dumpy troll kid just talking complete garbage. Mm-hmm. I have some theories on how that guy got Curtis's number, but I don't want to spread speculation, but that's not a good look for us podcasters whenever stuff like that happens. And that's all I want to say about that. Now, I've watched the Derek Lewis Curtis Blaydes finish several times now, upwards of probably about 24 times. And I'm going to repeal a little bit of how I felt on Saturday night. I think that Herb did the best he could given the situation. He was slightly out of position, but all that to say, he was in there with two guys over 6'4" that weighed 265 plus pounds, in a 23-foot octagon, and Herb is no small man himself. He was about as well positioned as he was going to be, given the way that they were moving around the fight. And the problem with bigger guys like that, especially in a Curtis Blaydes fight, is you've got to kind of stay out of the way because he will shoot for a takedown from anywhere. And if you are close or positioned behind Derek Lewis, you're going to get pancaked as he tries to push Derek up against the fence. So where he was at, all things considered, was probably about as good as it was going to get. And then even then, he hit Curtis. Curtis fell down, and then he hit him two more times. The first one was more glancing. The second one was a death punch. But Herb was in there then. The whole thing from start to finish, the sequence, was less than 3 seconds.
Right.
He literally saw what was happening and broke it up within 3 seconds. I don't think it's realistic to expect him to do it any faster than that.
And that's not even what I'm saying. My issue is with the people that immediately jump to the get out of MMA if you have something bad to say. Yeah. It's like, that's not how the conversation should go. What you just said, the way that you said it, very well articulated, makes a lot of sense. But my feeling is that we should always at least be able to talk about it. If somebody has strong feelings about the way that a fight went or how a fight was finished or whether or not a referee should have stepped in, we always should be able to discuss it. Because if we don't, if we can't get on the same page as a community, as people who regulate, as people who are refereeing, then eventually it's going to get moved up the chain and people are going to march in and do it for us. So I think we always have to be prepared to self-regulate and have those discussions.
Gotcha. What do you think, Trey?
I mean, I think that there's such a broad discrepancy with our refs because I don't think there's really a true plan as to how to become an official ref. I think it's still a work in motion. We see the discrepancy from a Herb Dean to a Chris Tione, you know, two completely different views as to someone getting knocked out, when to start, when to stop. You know, Neil said it in the chat here. We've come a long way since the Mazzagatis, you know. If I walked into the cage and Mazzagatis holding up his little stupid heart thing, I'm going to be like, oh, fuck, I'm probably going to die here today. Yeah. This guy's not going to save me. He does not have my best interest. I think that judging, it's still such a new sport, but to Kate's point, yeah, we need to improve the sport. And I think if we do it collectively and do it in a very like succinct, but, you know, formulated manner, we can get to a certain point. But the talking shit and the broad discrepancies, yeah, it's a hodgepodge of just garbage.
I think what we'll see coming down the pipe here at some point is I guess we probably like we see like in the NFL or the NBA, there will be an officiation or officiating review board where I know to some degree, because we've had these conversations with other fighters that have been privy to this, that there is a community after the fact where they sit down and they will review past events and they'll talk about it and use them as learning tools. But very rarely do we see something where there will be an absolute like review from some sort of impartial third party committee, whether they be retired referees or former fighters or whatever the case may be. There are schools and different organizations out there that will bring people in to review these things, but they have no regulatory capacity. I think we will see that at some point in time. It's probably coming sooner rather than later. So to your point, absolutely. I think what's going to end up happening is something will happen that will light the fire and spur that change and go, we can't have this. We have to have some sort of how they have the unified rules. There's got to be a universal, we need to touch on this kind of situation. So I agree.
I would just like to make sure that we get as ahead of it as possible.
Yeah.
Before someone dies.
Yes. Correct. Cause Derek Lewis is throwing, I'm going to kill you punches. So,
no kidding.
That's a thing. Please. So, anyway. All right. So let's do this. There we go. All right. Now that she told me that I can just kick her in and out whenever I want, I got to think of creative transitions to kick her out. All right. We got a couple more fights to break down. We've got three more fights that we need to get to here. Alexis Davis taking on Sabina Mazo. Alexis Davis at 19-10, taking on Sabina Mazo at 9-1. I'm going to be honest with you, Trey. Pretty surprised that Alexis Davis is still fighting. did not think that I would be seeing this still, but here she is. She's still fighting. She's still fighting the good fight, I guess. Plus 180, Sabina Mazza coming back. Minus 210, over under rounds at 2.5. It would be contradictory of me to say at this point that I'm not going to play Alexis Davis, but I do not think Alexis Davis is going to win this fight. But maybe I have to play her anyway because I said I was going to play every women's underdog for the rest of the year. So I'm beholden to my word, but I do not believe that Alexis Davis is going to win this fight.
No, dude, the UFC's got a plan here. They see in a hot prospect in Mazo. They need a little bit of a name. Alexis Davis, we may or may not know her. She's been around for a minute. I think she's, what, 36 years old?
She's old.
She's fought the who's who, though, dude. The who's who. She comes in, beats up Liz Carmouche, and then she's fought freaking Jennifer Maia, Kaylin Chookagian, Vivian Arjau. Dude, she's fought the freaking top five, the top five. The problem is, you know, she's on that three fight losing skid, but she's been around. She's a quote unquote vet. Mazo's coming in, got slick striking. She's going to be an inch taller. She's got the 2-inch reach advantage. She's got crazy good striking. I mean, I think this is a, you know, a bit of a pedestal for Mazo to come in and get this thing done. You know, from a better perspective, like, oh, look at the resume, look at her resume. No, let's look at the striking. Let's look at the energy. Let's look at the footwork. That's everything Mazo has, and she's going to lay it on Davis.
Yeah, I mean, Alexis Davis is an OG of women's MMA, man. She has fought the who's who. You're absolutely right. Back when there was only a handful of women that were competing, Alexis Davis was in that handful. She's fought the Tanya Evingers. She's fought the Sarah Kaufmans. She's fought, you know, obviously that really wild slam and then repetitive punch Ronda Rousey fight that they loved to show when Ronda was relevant. She's fought the who's who. She's been around for a long time. The game has not been particularly nice to her, and they're feeding her up to a prospect here. Without getting too into the weeds, I think Mazo gets it done. I don't necessarily know if it gets done inside the distance. The one thing I will say, though, is Alexis Davis will be the heavier fighter come fight night, and she's going to have the wealth of experience that a relatively new Sabina Mazo may or may not have the tools to compete with, but we'll see. We shall see. I really just kind of lean Mazo here just based off of the direction, the career trajectory, if you will. All right, so we got a last-second replacement here. Alex Oliveira at 22-9-1, taking on Ramazan Karamomega. Wait, hold on.
What?
When was this
fight put together?
Like today.
Great.
Magomedov. There we go. Magomedov. Magomedov. There we go. I'll say it a bunch, and we'll get it together here. But here, you know, we're essentially, they make this fight. Alex Oliveira goes from a favorite to an underdog just like that. And there is nothing currently available on over under on rounds. I know that we're hitting you with breaking news right now. I expect you to have nothing here. You just want to lean cowboy for plus money.
Oh man, dude, who is Ramazan Kirkamukamadoob, dude? I don't even know who that is. You know everything about Alex Oliveira. I don't know one thing about this guy except for he's got a scary last name and probably a neck beard, dude.
He does have a neck beard. He is a Caucasus Mountain warrior. He is undefeated.
Okay.
However, he's got a win in the PFL, but outside of that, he's got a win in the Contender Series, and then he was in the Krepus Fighting Championship in CFFFC.
Okay.
So now here's the thing. My man's first pro fight, you know what? You want to know who he fought for? The North Caucasian Fighting Championship. Caucasus Mountain Warrior, bro.
That is the most racist group I've ever heard of in my life.
What are you talking about? That's not racist at all. Caucasian is from the Caucasus Mountains.
So you can only be Caucasian to fight in it?
No, they're just saying it's regional. It's like saying the Greater Iowa Fighting League.
I don't know, dude. I don't know. 2021, bro. I don't know if that league's still around. It might be called like the.
Don't. We have. Don't. I can already see where you're going, and we can't peel back. This is live. We can't peel these things back. I'm going to tiptoe you back away from that ledge before you get us canceled.
Okay. My B.
All right. So neck beard for the win here at good money. All right. Alexander Hernandez at 12-3, taking on Tiago Moises at 14 And for our final prelim of the evening here, Trey, Alexander Hernandez is a favorite in this fight. He actually is a favorite in most fights that he's in, despite having that weird wishy-washy record. Minus 180, taking on Thiago Moises, plus 156 over on rounds here is at 2.5. Thiago Moises coming off that win over Bobby Green in a fight that I thought Bobby Green won. But here we go. All the same. Thiago Moises, what do you got?
Dude, the only reason that Alexander Hernandez comes in as favorites is because we look at the yesteryear when he used to talk mad shit like the cowboy fight. And then what happens? He gets it laid on him. Dude, it's the same thing with Dober, dude. When he's met with someone's superior, you know, competition and or like historicals behind him, he gets freaking laid out. Alex Hernandez is supposed to be a guy that has great wrestling. You know, he's supposed to have better striking. I will say I like the team that he moved to. I think he's getting better looks. Thiago Moises, though, he's going to be better on the ground. I think that Alex Hernandez's best path to victory is to exercise that wrestling and in the clinch utilize some explosion. But Alex Hernandez reminds me of like a shittier version of Kevin Lee. Talks a big game, but doesn't ever get it done from the victory standpoint. It's the same thing, dude. It's literally, tell me, those are the same guys. They're guys that run their mouth and then get shut up. Never able to put something in the win column.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but freaking Kevin Lee knocked out Gregor, and I love Gregor Gillespie, so I was very – honestly, that's one of the biggest losses I've ever had in betting since I've been betting.
Gregor?
The Gregor-Kevin Lee fight was – there was two fights that I lost a ton on. That was one of them. My two biggest losses from a betting perspective were – Gregor Gillespie and Kevin Lee and Miguel Cotto versus Floyd Mayweather. Yeah, those are my two biggest losses.
You lost money and Megan O'Leary has nightmares for the rest of her life, dude. It was a horrible night.
Yeah, I appreciate the clip of Megan being super scared, but I'm upset that I lost a lot of money. So anyway, it's a great take, by the way. Great take. So are you taking Thiago here or are you going to take Alexander Hernandez? I don't even know where you landed there.
I know. I'm going to go with Alex Hernandez just because, again, I like the team he's with. I like that he's getting looks with Brandon Roy Val and stuff like that.
Is he in Elevation or do you go to Factory X?
No, he went to Factory X. Yeah.
Okay. That's good. That's good. Listen, getting humbled by Dober will tell you that you need to go to Colorado and try to figure something out, man. Listen, look at what Curtis did to Alistair, right? Mm-hmm. So Curtis goes in, he destroys Alistair Overeem, and Overeem says, I want to go where you're at and learn what you did. Well, I can do that to other people. And Alexander Hernandez had the same thing. Not necessarily like tit for tat going straight to Elevation, but he definitely went to Colorado, which is a hotbed for MMA talent right now. So there are tons of good teams there right now. So shout out Team Elevation, High Altitude Martial Arts, Factory X too, just crushing it right now. All right. Yeah. The third, the final, like the Lord of the Rings movie. It's a Return of the King. We got Return. Hot take, Kate. Here we go for the third and final hot take of the evening.
Yes. I need a minute to recover. Trey had me snorting in that whole Caucasus Mountains bit. Oh my God.
Oh, yeah. Dale has to reel me back from time to time. They put us in hot water. Hot Kate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So the fight that I was going to use as the example for this is the fight that shall not be named. So we'll just pretend I have a different example.
What fight? What fight?
Wait, which fight?
Oh, Phil Paz.
Oh,
they go. Okay. Yeah. Well, you made me say his name. So it totally ruined the whole thing. Whatever. I desperately, desperately want there to be a way, and I haven't figured it out yet, but I want there to be a way for fighters to win at the end of a fight that they have thus far been losing. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
When MMA began, part of the whole premise was this idea of we want to figure out which martial art is the best. Yes. We want to figure out the best way to simulate real world fighting experiences and see what would happen.
Yes.
In a controlled environment. And it bothers me to an just it bothers me that a fighter can be doing pretty well for maybe two rounds, and maybe one of those rounds is questionable. Like in this fight, they were close. I think might've been round two that was pretty close. But then in the third round, fighter B just goes for the jugular and he can't quite finish it. Right. He can't quite finish it, but you know, if that fight had two more minutes, it just shut out, end of story, no question. And in the real world, there are no referees, there are no bells. And I feel like if I were a judge sitting there, I'd be like, wait, can I get my scorecard back? Can I change it for the last one? Because it was close. And now I think that guy won the fight and there's no way to make him win the fight. And I just want there to be a way to make him win the fight.
Trey, go ahead.
Yeah, totally. I didn't hear no bell. You know what I mean? Like, that's, I think that this is one of those things where the only way to, like, you know, light a fire under someone's ass is to do what Dale's been calling for a long time, an open scoring. I think that's the only way that you can put an exclamation mark on fights like that. I mean, granted, Imavov knew that he was down after two rounds.
Yes.
But I think broadly scoring that, and then, you know, granted, there's crowd and stuff like that, that's going to die on your shield mentality in the third round. That's the only way I can see it actually going down. I don't think changing scorecards. Phil Haas implemented a game plan. It was boring, ridiculous, and absolutely, I don't know. I could talk so much shit on it. It's a ridiculous campaign. But I think at the end of the day, he did what he needed to do to win. Good for him. He's going to get his show and his win money. But open scoring, I think, is the only way to progress that, right, Dale?
So open scoring is one thing. And Kate, I appreciate you taking us on a MMA origin story. I'm going to
for everyone else. You know, that wasn't for you.
I'm going to touch base on something here real quick. And I believe I've mentioned it before, but maybe I haven't. For those that are unaware, Pride used to do this event every year called Bushido. And the Bushido event was designed to be scored differently, in that whoever was winning at the end of the sanctioned time, essentially you were supposed to then draw that line and differentiate that person, given all things considered, if the fight were to continue from that moment forward, whoever was winning the fight would continue to win the fight, and that is then who was awarded the victory. So you could be getting wrestle humped up against the cage, or in that instance, the ropes for the better half of 20 minutes. But in that final 10-minute round, if you were getting the better of the person and the fight ended, the judges would go, all things considered, if this fight continued along its current trajectory, we have reason to believe that fighter A was going to win. So we award fighter A the fight. I think there's a place for it. Mm-hmm. I agree that there needs to be a way to win the fight, but I also understand a draw. And there are times where fights end in a draw, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Look at the Figueiredo Moreno fight. I'm okay with that being a draw. The Weili Zhang Joanna Jędrzejczyk fight, I'm okay with that being a draw. There are times where, all things considered, you can have these two magnetic forces slamming into each other all night long, and there will be an ebb and flow to that conflict that it will not be resolved no matter how long you let it go.
Right.
So the only differentiating factor that I can determine that would possibly eliminate that, or do more so to eliminate it, would be to change the round times or stagger round times, almost like old Pride, where the first round was 10 minutes long. So it gives people more opportunity in the combat. Or you implement open scoring so everybody is very aware of where they stand going into the final round. So it gives that person the opportunity to go out on their shield. And even then, and this is the problem that I have, and I don't want to get on too big of a rant here, is that you as a judge are to score the fight one round at a time. Nice. So perfect example, Johnny Hendricks and GSP. A lot of people think that Johnny Hendricks won that fight. But if you look at that fight and you watch it one round at a time, GSP won more rounds. Mm-hmm. Johnny Hendricks did more damage. In the rounds that he won more decisively. But GSP won more rounds. You score the fight one round at a time. at a time.
It's a Dominic Reyes, John Jones fight. Same thing.
Same thing. Same thing. The other thing that I would like to see here, and my man Neil has been spitting fire in the chat all night. I'm going to give him credit for it. Be more strict on point deductions for eye pokes and fence grabbing.
You
brief the fighters in the back on what your expectations are from a safety and behavior standpoint. One warning. After that, it's a point. And if even then, it doesn't even have to be a warning. If what you did changes the outcome of either a position change or an exchange, it should be an automatic point. Neil, you're killing it in the comments, man. I appreciate you. Thank you. Merk. All right.
I think there's possibly one more thing to look at is also the way that the fight, this is a take that I had a little bit of trouble with because like, it's something that I do feel really strongly about, but at the same time, like, I don't want to see it. Like, I don't want us to go away from this whole chess match idea of a fight where there is a strategy and like, you are looking at it round by round. And I do like it for the most part. There are just some fights where it's just like, oh God, this just, it's just frustrating the way that this ended. And I think that the other thing that I do really wish that we would explore is more rounds that are scored 10-8. 10-7, like getting that draw that you're talking about. Had that been a 10-8 scored round, that would have been a draw.
Yeah, it also depends too. I mean, the fact that it's a 10-point must. So if the winner must get 10 points, that also changes things a little bit too.
Right. So. And I don't like that. Because there have been some big nothing burger rounds this year where it's like, neither of you deserve 10 points. What are we doing?
Sure. Well, Kate, I appreciate it. You brought the fire this week. Three fantastic points. I, as always, pleasure having you on. Next week, you will not be here because we've got somebody special lined up next week.
More special than me.
Yeah. Well, you know, it happens sometimes.
I'm not even allowed to come.
Trey won't even be here. Trey won't even be here. I'm going to relegate you to the shadow realm real quick, but stick around for a minute. Okay.
Okay.
All right. All right, guys, let's put a bow on this bad boy. Couple different things, a couple announcements coming up. So Tuesday, March 2nd, so next Tuesday, the show will begin an hour earlier if you're interested in the YouTube live stream. We will have John Anik coming on the show for an hour. He's giving us an hour of his time Tuesday, March 2nd at 8 o'clock Eastern. I'm just saying the Eastern time, Trey, because you're not going to be here. So my Pacific people, I appreciate you. You can do that conversion on your own. It'll be 5 o'clock your time there on the West Coast. Yep. But we will have Anik. We'll have him for an hour leading into probably what's going to be the biggest pay-per-view of the year. We're going to get him for an hour. We're going to break down all of the fights, or at least as much as we can fit into an hour's worth. So we'll have John Anik next week on the show. That Saturday, the Saturday of the card, UFC was at 259, correct? UFC 259. On this channel, on the YouTube live channel, we are going to have a watch party / fight companion where we're all going to log on. We're going to watch fights. We're going to drink some brews together, eat some food, hang out. We're going to do giveaways. We've got new shirts to give away. We're also partnering up with Strictly MMA Talk Show. So if you haven't already followed them, go to Strictly MMA on Instagram or at Strictly MMA Talk Show. Give them a follow. We're going to team up with them. They're going to contribute to this as well. They have stuff they're going to give away. We have stuff we're going to give away. And we've got tons of games, tons of content for this fight companion. It's going to be the first one that we do. And based on whether or not it's successful, we'll determine whether or not we do it again. So show up, show out, and let's make the most of it. You can follow along all the updates throughout the week leading up to that on our social media channels at PunchlistMMA, or you can email us at chat@PunchlistMMA or on Twitter at PunchlistMMA as well. Appreciate everybody that continues to support the show. Trey, you are flying to Hawaii here in what, 3 days?
Friday. I'm on a flight. I took a nice COVID test. I don't know if the person was like pissed off at me, but they shoved that shit so far up my nose, dude. Scrambled my brain.
Oh, I didn't think you were going to say you got the nose test. I thought you were going to say you got the other one.
Nope. San Diego International Airport, they decided to shove it up my nose and get me on a flight, dude.
Gotcha. I thought you opted for the Chinese test.
Which one is that?
It's the one where they go straight up the brown eye.
Oh, That is the most accurate. It is the most accurate.
That's what I thought. That's what you were, I thought. That's where you were rolling when you were like, we shoved it so far. That's good, man. Look, I hope that you have a glorious vacation. I know how hard you work. And I think that you'll come back well rested, rejuvenated, at just in time for me to break your spirits publicly on March 6th. So I'm excited for that. Yeah.
I'm pumped, man. I know you have John Anik on. I am going to do one thing though.
Sure.
I know you just give away shit without even telling me. That's fine. I'm going to give away shit without even telling you. I'm going to put up a poll. I'm going to put up the poll a couple times because I want to get accurate votes. Will John Anik come on the show with a mustache? If the guy comes on with a mustachio man.
Yeah.
Whatever he comes on the show with, those people, I will write you down what you voted. Those that picked right, you'll be in a wheel, the pirate wheel of a giveaway. So the, you know, the group will be smaller, more opportunity to win beer. Will John Anik have a mustachio man?
Okay. I'm going to wax my mustache for when he comes on. I just want you to know. I'm going to wax it. It's, I don't have a full Mobius, but I'm going to get out there. We're going to make it work. So I will wax the stash for when he comes on. I'm excited for it. Listen, I appreciate everybody that supports the show. If you haven't done so, please consider subscribing to the YouTube channel. If you listen to this only on audio, consider watching the live stream with us. We appreciate that. If you haven't done so, please leave a review on iTunes or Google Store, wherever you possibly can. And we will be giving stuff away on the March 6th show. We'll be doing some beer money giveaways leading up to that as well. Like Trey said, via our Insta channel as well, at Punchless MMA. If you haven't done so, please follow Hot Take Kate at Sophisticated MMA on Instagram. And she's got a YouTube channel too, even though she doesn't use it that much. Feel free to subscribe to her on there as well. Shout out to everybody that supports the show and producer Jake in the background all the time. Appreciate you guys. Everybody that listens to the show. Be good to each other. We'll see everybody next week. And I'll talk to everybody on Saturday because Trey won't be manning the socials. It'll be your boy. So let's make some money this weekend.
Bang, bang.